Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I hope people will kind of go back into his catalog and take a listen, because it's really stuff that deserves to be heard.
Hello, everybody. Patrick here. I want to welcome you to Rockin' the Suburbs and let you know that we're going to be taking a break from our airing of episodes we recorded at Suburbs Fest DC, a third annual DC Suburbs Fest, in order to bring you an appreciation of a musician who recently passed away. And we will be back with more Suburbs Fest recordings on Tuesday. But in the meantime, please enjoy this appreciation.
Sad news from the world of music. Dwight Twilley, singer and songwriter, has passed at the age of 72. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Phil Ingrassia is here. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Hi.
So we have Phil on because I know Phil is a big fan of Dwight Twilley's music. I know it has come up in the past, and then I saw a post on social media that Phil made about Dwight Twilley being on your Mount Rushmore of power pop, I think is how you described it. And I got to admit here, I have a blind spot when it comes to Dwight Twilley. It was a guy, I always knew the name. I remembered one hit from the 80s on MTV called Girls. I remembered that he had another hit in the 70s called I'm on Fire, but that was pretty much the extent of my knowledge. And Patrick, it sounded like you were kind of in a similar position, right?
Exactly the same, almost. I mean, I know that I have one of the Dwight Twilley Band songs on a power pop compilation. I was familiar with I'm on Fire. Of course, Girls was pretty well known. And when I went back today and was listening to some of the stuff and reading about it, I'm so glad that Phil is here, who has followed his career very closely to tell us more.
Exactly. So, Phil, we turn it over to you. What should people know about Dwight Twilley?
Well, you know, Dwight Twilley was one of these guys that really got kind of messed around by the record labels. He was a label mate of Tom Petty on Shelter. And they were actually really good friends and very mutually supportive in the 70s and even going into the 80s. Dwight was from Tulsa, and he teamed up with a drummer named Phil Seymour to form the Dwight Twilley Band. And they went into the studio and with the express goal of writing a hit. And guess what? They wrote one. I'm on Fire got up number 16 in the pop charts back in 1975. And it's just a great, you know, Raspberries type of a sounding, maybe even getting into T-Rex, you know, Bang a Gong, that kind of a driving power pop anthem, really. And you know, it was a great success, and then the record label issues started. The follow-up single and record didn't come out till a year later,
right,
which, you know, back then was an eternity because, right, people were putting out a record every year. Yep. And there was all kinds of distribution problems. But the album itself, Sincerely, that has I'm on Fire on it, is really, really a strong record. The title track, Sincerely, is great. There's kind of a rockabilly number called TV that's, it's sort of a throwaway, but it's really a great example of, you know, kind of second generation rockabilly.
I got my baby at home. I turn the lights down low and turn the TV on. Channel 27 for the late movie. Pretty good thing, and it's called TV, TV, TV. You know that sometimes, baby, it's a pretty good company. Hold me close, cause it's a mystery. I don't want to be afraid of a silver screen. If there's one thing, baby, that you gotta see, pretty good thing, and it's called a TV, TV, TV. I know that sometimes, baby, it's a pretty good company. I said that sometimes, baby, it's a pretty good company.
And, you know, that kind of set up a bunch of other problems that he had going into the 80s, really.
So how did you get into Dwight Twilley? What about his music attracted you?
Well, it's like so many things. You know, I was a denizen of the cutout bins. And so I would buy, you know, cutout 8-tracks and cutout records and because of the distribution problems that they had with his labels, the album that was in the cutouts, you know, just everywhere, was Twilley Don't Mind. It was his second record. And it was, the cover is him and Phil Seymour on it in kind of boy band looking cover. And, so, I mean, this was probably 78, 79. I bought it and put it on, and I was like, holy crap, this stuff is great. I mean, it is so engaging. And this is the time of the Cars and the Knack. Hmm. It fits sort of right into that. And I'm like, why aren't these guys popular? And, you know, then I kind of forgot about them for a while. And then, you know, 5 years later, who's this on the radio? It's Girls. It's Tom Petty singing background, mm-hmm. and Dwight's back on the radio again. It's like, holy crap, I forgot all about this guy.
Right.
And I actually got to see him in all his Dwight Twilley glory at First Avenue in Minneapolis on that tour.
Wow.
And I brought a bunch of my college buddies at the time, and I said, we got to go see this guy. And I had made them listen to Dwight Twilley. And actually, Phil Seymour had put out a couple of solo records, and I made them listen to those too. And we all went, and there was probably about 100 people there. And so we got right up to the stage, and I'm yelling at Dwight, where's Phil Seymour? And he puts his hands up to his face, and he tilts his head, and he closes his eyes, and he goes, sleeping. Because they had broken up by that time, uh-huh. but they were really good friends, and you know, Phil Seymour died at a very young age of cancer, I believe. And they had actually had plans in the late 80s to reform the Dwight Twilley Band. Mm. And unfortunately, Phil's health just wouldn't allow that to happen. And it never did. But, you know, he's just one of these guys, kind of like Tommy Keane, who just were so close. But just a bunch of, you know, bad decisions, greedy record company people, you know, that Tom Petty was able to work through it just never really worked out for Dwight for whatever reason.
I listened to Sincerely today, and two things came to my mind. And the first one was Tommy Keane, and it was like, this is the exact same, you know, kind of an approach as Tommy Keane. Now, I definitely will say, I think that Dwight's music and Phil Seymour's music was a little more rootsy, and right. I think that's probably owing to the Tulsa background and all that. Like, certainly they had a, like you mentioned, rockabilly. And the other band that came to my mind was the band The Shoes. From Illinois, who also worked in that same vein. They worked around the same time. They were also another band where you thought, wow, when you listen to their records. And that's another one where it'd be so easy for anyone to have a blind spot, either of those artists, of course, Tommy Keane. And it just, you know, was like, wow, that, you know, they were at a time when, like you outlined, Phil, that they were so dependent on their record company and they're so dependent on the radio. And you know, in Dwight's case, it seemed like, as you said, even if he got on the radio, that didn't necessarily make it, you know, that it was going to happen. And, you know, like The Shoes never really, I don't know if they had a big as hit as Dwight Twilley. I don't think they did, but it's kind of the same thing where it was just this incredible, you know, all the elements were there, yet it didn't connect for whatever reason.
Right. I know you guys have a lot of listeners in the Twin Cities, and another band that kind of fit into that category that had a major label deal but never really made it, the Flamin' O's, formerly Flamingo. They became the Flamin' O's, but it was they were kind of a new wave pop group. And you know, they get the major label, they sign, they put out the record, and it just never happens for whatever reason,
right,
you know.
Right. Now, one other thing I read about Dwight Twilley, there was a song maybe on the same album as Girls that was later used in Wayne's World. Do you know about this?
Yeah, he had a few songs that got picked up in various movies. I'm not exactly sure which song they used on Wayne's World.
What's the ballad, the famous ballad that he did?
It could be Why You Want to Break My Heart.
Yes, that's it.
That was it.
That's a great song.
And Tia Carrere sang it, you know, in the Wayne's World movie.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting that he got, you know, he got a songwriting, you know, gig out of that, right?
And yeah.
Big placement in a major movie. Yeah.
Right. And another song that he did, and he put it out on a compilation called 21, which is out of print, and it's written in Roman numerals. Mm. And it's got a really ugly cover. But evidently, do you guys remember that movie, That Thing You Do with Tom Hanks?
Yes, of course.
Evidently, at the time, they did an kind of open, the producers did an open call to write a song called That Thing You Do. And so Dwight wrote a song and submitted it to the producers. And they ultimately rejected it, of course. But it's a really good song. And he put it on this compilation. And people who want to listen to it can listen to it on YouTube. It's a lot darker than the song that they ended up picking for the Wonders. But it's a really, really, really good song.
I do think that speaks to his credibility, right? Because I know that they had maybe 20 or so artists they reached out to write, you know, a song with that title that they could use in the movie. And the fact that he was one of them shows that, like, he was respected as that type of songwriter, you know, that could do that kind of power pop kind of stuff that would fit, you know, that would sound like a 60s song, right?
Right. And the guy that wrote it's a power pop legend, right? Adam Schlesinger from Bombs of Wayne.
That's right.
So, I mean, I think he may have co-wrote that. I don't remember. Yeah. But, I mean, it just shows you, you know, kind of where Dwight fits into the legacy of power pop and rock.
That's right.
It was amazing to me listening to the record. It was just like putting on a pair of old jeans that you had like in the drawer. I mean, it felt so comfortable. It felt so right. And I was really struck by, you know, the roots aspect of it. And that to me was kind of what was different. And you could certainly hear Petty, his influence and kind of the same thing. But two, Tulsa is such an interesting, you know, musical town. There's a lot of interesting people that came from Tulsa. And it's fascinating just, you know, reading about Dwight. And, you know, he went so far back, you know, as to be one of those kids like Roger McGuinn and all the other people who the first time they saw A Hard Day's Night, it was like, this is what I want to do, you know, exactly. But they seem to carry over that that roots-ish element. And I don't know, Phil, if you remember from seeing him, did that come across when he played live, or was it more like, you know, seeing the Raspberries or something like that?
Well, you know, Dwight was a huge Beatles fan, as was Phil Seymour. In fact, when you look for Dwight music, you'll see that he did a bunch of Beatle cover records.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. And this is what he was doing in the 90s and the 2000s in his own studio and stuff like that. And he's one of these guys that plays everything, right? He played keyboards, guitar, drums, sings. So he does everything himself, you know. And that may have been to his detriment a little bit too, but it really comes across the craftsmanship of his songwriting and what he was doing. And he's really informed by the Beatles. And I mean, even he looked like a rock star. I remember when I saw him in 1984, I mean, skinny Beatle haircut. He never changed his hairstyle for, you know, 40 years, but he was really, really a guy that, could put a song across. He was great live. I did get to see him in his later years up in Annapolis at a small show he did. But he, you know, and the sad thing is we don't really, you know, and we're doing this a lot these days, right? These tribute things. Yeah, right. You don't really appreciate some of these folks until they pass, and then you dig into it. And, you know, the circumstances surrounding his death, you know, those of us of a certain age, right? You read what happened, you know, Dwight was driving in his car by himself, had a massive stroke, ran into a tree, and he never recovered after this accident last week.
Right.
And, you know, for those of us of a certain age, it's like, there for the grace of God go by. You know, that could happen to any one of us.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
But, you know, it's such a tragedy. And he was, to me, you know, he was really important artist in my growing up, and I, you know, I was just interested in him. I was buying his later records and he'd autograph stuff, and you know, he had a big mail order thing, but you know, just it really affected me. It was tough to take.
Lives on, right? And the beauty of the streaming world now is you can go back and hear this stuff pretty easily.
Yeah.
So I would encourage listeners to do that. And one little tip here, if you want to hear the earlier stuff, make sure you click on Dwight Twilley Band on the streaming service, not just Dwight Twilley. That's where you get to get the earlier records there.
Right. And you know, there's quite a few of his records available online to stream on Apple or Tidal or whatever you use. But there's some records out of print, mm-hmm. like his first album, Twilley, is not on the streaming services. This compilation is out of print, this 21. So, yeah, you might have to do some crate digging to find the complete discography. I have most of it.
You got to go to the cutout bin.
I think I have all of it.
Yeah, back to the $2.99, $3.99 bins.
Yeah.
Where would you recommend, Phil, from the stuff that is available that people begin?
Oh, sincerely, the first record, Twilley Don't Mind. Okay. There's a live record that they did at the Agora.
Yeah, I saw that. Album. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a nice time capsule. And then, you know, Girls, that one's not my favorite song, but that album's got a few, really good songs on it. And, you know, also check out the Phil Seymour solo records. Those are kind of fun. He's even poppier than, than Dwight. So it's, you might have to brush your teeth after listening to it. It's so sugary. It's all good, man.
I will say this about the song Girls, which was a hit song. I think that was also a top 20 hit song in the 80s. I haven't heard that song in forever. And when I listened to it, it was like a file cabinet drawer opened up in my mind.
Oh, wow.
And the song just came out. And I like immediately remembered the whole song. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just like after the first few bars, I was just like, I can remember this entire song now.
You were singing along at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a catchy song. It's definitely a catchy song.
Well, I think when Dwight put that out, he was 33, and I'm younger than that. And I remember thinking, this is kind of creepy. And he's singing like that, but whatever.
It's rock and roll.
It's big, man. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Hey, in 1984, I think when it came out, so I was like 17. So it worked for me.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked for you.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right. All right. Oh, Patrick.
I was going to say one thing, that it's interesting to me, just like Phil was talking about, like, I'm a denizen of the cutout bins, or, you know, I came across stuff, you know, like in a certain point or whatever. And that just really stuck with me. And it's always great, you know, to have those little kind of relationships with musicians and artists that you're always saying to other people, you got to listen to this, like, this should be big, you know? And it just seems like everything I've heard, read, and certainly listened to today, I mean, I was just blown away driving around today. Like, I don't think I've ever listened to that album completely. And not only was I like, damn it, why wasn't I listening to this a long time ago? But also, you know, it's really cool and very touching to hear Phil talk about that relationship that you have. And it's always neat as a music fan, to have those kind of relationships with those artists that never really, you know, go broader or anything like that. I find it one of the most unique things about music. And I was lucky to have that relationship with Tommy Keane. And, you know, everybody sort of has that. But I think you can really feel that with Phil and Dwight Twilley. And I guess the only thing, the only question I have and sort of that boggled me was, I don't understand why, since the two of them seem to be working so closely together, Phil Seymour and Dwight, why it was called the Dwight Twilley Band. I don't know. I guess he was the better looking guy. I don't know.
That's a good question. And part of the reason that Dwight feels that Phil wanted to leave the Dwight Twilley Band is because Phil saw it as a 50-50 relationship. And it was really the record company that wanted him to change their name from Oyster was the name, which is
right.
Kind of a but they wanted to change it to the Dwight Twilley Band. And Phil was on board with that. But as they got a little bit more popular, he wanted to, as Dwight said, get out behind the drum kit and be the front man for it. And, you know, just to your point about, you know, when we were growing up and people, you know, who are in their teens and 20s now don't totally get it. Radio playlists were so tight.
Right.
That the cutouts were a whole new, you know, it's like our streaming service.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an affordable way to listen to new music that you couldn't hear on the radio.
Yeah, so I
was
true.
In,
good
point. And Minneapolis was horribly tight playlists. You know, the cutouts, Roxy Music, early Genesis, you know, just all kinds of stuff that I got through the cutout bins that I never would have ever heard on the Minneapolis radio stations because I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand the repetition.
Right.
And Dwight was one of those artists that, you know, I discovered through the, you know, three for a dollar.
Great point. You know? That's a great point. Yeah,
it is. All right. Well, rest in power, Dwight Twilley.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a great guy. And I hope people will kind of go back into his catalog and take a listen because it's really stuff that deserves to be heard.
Me too. Okay. Me too.
Well, if any listeners out there have any recollections or comments, they can email rock@suburbspod.com. They can call the Suburban Party Line
612-440-1984.
Or they can find us on the social medias. I don't even know what we're on now. Facebook. What was Twitter?
X.
Instagram. Yeah. I think we're on Threads now. So anyway, all of it's at Suburbs Pod. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just look for that. Yep.
So yeah, find us these places. All right. And thanks to Phil and Gracia.
Thank you, Phil.
Hey, thank you guys for allowing me to be on. You know, what you're doing with the podcast is just blows me away.
Wow. We love you,
guys,
man.
You work hard on it. And it's really appreciated.
All right. Thanks very much. And with that, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you later.
Dwight, where's Phil Seymour?